The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Before I made baby number one, I identified as queer. That was how I identified. I got pregnant by a man, and all of a sudden, I wasn't queer enough anymore. Like, I wasn't the way that my family responded when I got pregnant by a man was, see, I told you you're not gay. See, which I told sucks. You you're not queer. And then the way that some of the queer community responded was like, no, you see, you don't fit in here.
Welcome, 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 y'all, to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay, the show that celebrates, highlights, uplifts, and normalizes L'Gibbetiqua families and all of our fabulous identities. And this episode is no exception. None of them are exceptions. We know this. I say it every time. But this one is really good, too. This episode starts with a question that I think we could use to talk about more. What happens when the world decides that you're not queer enough anymore? Because my guest, Kaya, always identified as queer. And then she got pregnant by a man. And suddenly everything shifted. Her family said, see, we told you, which I'm sure many of us have heard before. And parts of the queer community said, you don't fit here anymore. And this was all at the exact same time that she was becoming a parent. And from there, her story just kept unfolding, from single parenthood to meeting her partner, to navigating a trans partner's situation, to building their second child through reciprocal IVF with a known donor, and leaving the country now to build a life that actually feels safe, which I'm sure we can all relate to at this point. It is layered, it is messy, it is deeply human. And it's a really honest look at how queer families don't just get built, they get rebuilt over and over again. And before I roll the tape, I just want to tell you a little anecdote about what's going on in my house. So my daughter and I, my 12-year-old Rose, we recently attended an event that she was meeting a bunch of people that I knew, but that hadn't met her yet. And they, listen, all these people know I am gay as the day is gay and as the day is long. I'm gay. I even have they all know I have a podcast all about queer families, all the things, right? So I'm introducing my daughter to all these people. And I tell you what, so many of them were like, oh my God, the resemblance is uncanny. I could have told she was your daughter from across the room. Which is just a little nuanced thing with our families. As we all know, I did not birth her. My daughter knows I did not birth her. We both know we do not share genetics. So if we look alike, it's just a coincidence. We both love it. And one of my favorite things with my kid growing up and really knowing her family and how we're made and who we are as a family. Like, now it's just this fun thing. We just share a glance with each other, like this knowing glance, and oh, thank you so much. And we're just chuckling to ourselves. And then when the person leaves, we'll like hit elbows, like, huh, there we go. Little do they know. It's just like a fun thing that my daughter and I share. That's special and unique in our families. And she has no shame over it. She has no weird feelings over it. I have no shame over it. I have no weird feelings. It's just a fun thing it's a bond that we share together and that we get to like talk about when we leave situations like that. Like, oh my God, wasn't that so funny? You know, and also I think both of us find it to be kind of a compliment when somebody says we look like each other, because listen, I think my daughter is gorgeous. And I can say that because I had no hand in what she looks like. I mean, I helped choose the donor, so perhaps that is so. But like, I can say, oh yeah, she is gorgeous, because she got none of me. She got none of me in her. So it's not like I'm like giving myself props. I'm not. She's gorgeous. I think my daughter's gorgeous inside and out. Not that that matters. But anyway, just a fun thing that our families share. I'm sure you all have things like that as well. We don't all always look alike. And that's beautiful too. Right? That's gorgeous too. It's just, we all have our little knowing things that we share with our kids that make us extra special, extra unique, extra intentional, and just amazing. And I think my new thing is going to be like, when we get comments like that, I think I'm just going to quickly be like, oh, well, you should see my wife. Just to see how they react to it. And then my daughter will get a laugh and then we'll have another laugh and then we'll move on with our day. But anyway, just fun little things about family life when you're a queer family trying to make it in this here world. All right, let's get to today's episode. It's a really good one. It's going to give you the feels and it's just an affirmation of how awesome we queer folks are when it comes to family. We're doing it. We're doing it. We're doing it right. And everybody who thinks we're not needs to listen to these episodes because they'll just hear that we are. All right. Helen, Beulah, my loves, come on up off the couch and roll this tape, please. All right, let's go. Let's roll this tape. Let's go. You should see my wife.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Hi, Deani. Oh my God, you are never going to believe what my wife said to me the other day. I cannot
wait. Jamie. Save it for the Patreon.
What? Oh, right. Oh, that's a good idea. Yeah. Okay. Listen, everyone at home, if you want to hear what my wife said, plus a lot of other things that I have been dying to get off my chest, and there are some things, y'all, there really are, you need to come join us on our Patreon.
Oh,
and
yeah.
It's me and my good friend Deani here, the amazing millennial who is young and sprightly, spilling all the tea in our queer little lives and exclusive contents that you literally cannot find anywhere else, literally nowhere else in the world.
The link is in the bio. Come be part of the queer family.
Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
Hi, Kaya.
Hi, Jamie.
It's so nice to have you here in the studio.
I'm so happy to be here.
Kaya, let's get into it. I want the listeners to know who you are and why you're here talking to the Queer Fam Squad. So we're going to get right into your 30-second elevator pitch.
I'm ready.
On your mark, get set, go.
Hi, I'm Kaya Colin. I'm a therapist and couples coach and the founder of The Relational Compass. A little bit about me personally, I'm a queer femme. My pronouns are she, they. I'm a parent of two, and I have a spouse who I've been with for 9 years. I have 15 years clinical experience, and I'm a nerd about neuroscience and nervous system science, and I'm excited to get to talk to you about me personally and how I work with couples.
Love it. Boom. You did a great job.
Okay, great.
Let's talk about it, Kaya. You are a parent of two, I think you said.
Yep.
And you've been with your partner for how long, did you say?
9 years.
9 years. Can we get into that a little bit? Can we get into like just the beginning of your relationship? And I want to dig into your whole family building journey. So let's start where you think the best beginning spot is.
Yeah. Well, there are so many different spots, but I think let's get into where I met my partner. And that brings us back 9 years ago. And at that time, I'm a single parent of a one-year-old and was just kind of in like single mom mode of working and taking care of my kid and thought that nobody would want a part of what I had to offer at this time. It starts at work is how I meet my spouse. So I walk into my job in a rural Washington mental health crisis center. And I see my spouse and I'm like, oh my goodness, another queer. Like, oh my goodness.
We spot each other.
We were like, oh my gosh. And so I asked them their pronouns and they melted. And we're like, aww. Oh my gosh, thank you for asking my pronouns. And we just started building a working relationship. And then it took a bit of time to, I was very protective of my kiddo and like navigating how to add somebody in. So for like a year, it was a friendship. It was just getting to know each other, playing and building some trust. And then I think we had a conversation and they were like, it wasn't a so where is this going conversation, but it was kind of like they were trying to express their feelings to me. And I was like, oh, I like how things are. And they heard me saying like, no.
Yeah.
And then they like grieved for a night and then came back to me the next day and like were able to articulate better what they were asking. And I was like, no, yes, I feel you. I want to like, let's do this. So that's kind of how it started.
Okay. I love this. And how did you get baby number one? Did you make baby number one the queer way? Were we like, can I ask what's the story there?
This is something that I want to get into because before I made baby number one, I identified as queer. That was how I identified. I got pregnant by a man and all of a sudden I wasn't queer enough anymore. Like I wasn't the way that my family responded when I got pregnant by a man was, see, I told you you're not gay. See, which I told you you're not queer. And then the way that some of the queer community responded was like, no, you see, you don't fit in here.
Wow. That's tough. That's like an identity crisis in a way. Like when you begin identifying as queer, when you begin identifying like within the LGBTQIA umbrella, so to speak, like you're all of a sudden you're part of this community. Like it becomes, I don't know how to explain, but I know you know what I mean. Like it just becomes like it is so woven into who I am now. And I am so very proud of it. And I identify so strongly in my lesbian, my L in the acronym, you know what I mean? That losing that would feel horrible. I can only imagine.
It was and at the same time of like getting into this identity of who I am as a parent. Mm-hmm. Like trying to figure out who am I, like re-identifying who am I in this community while also being like, oh my goodness, who am I as a parent, and the identity shifts and the identity crisis that happened with the transition to parenthood.
Right. Then that's a whole thing too.
Right.
That's a whole thing. But so were you co-parenting with the man?
This is a part that I don't want to get into too much. But I will say that I don't mind talking about how I got pregnant and a little bit about that because I think it's unique. I was in the Peace Corps in Thailand.
Ooh.
And I was living in Thailand and I had an IUD at the time.
Uh-huh.
And this was not on my radar. So this was completely surprised. So how my transition to parenthood begins is being like evacuated, medically evacuated out of Thailand to the United States. My pregnancy was covered by workers' comp.
Oh.
Interesting.
Wow. Yeah. Uh-huh.
For some interesting, just to give context to how that all went down. And I jumped right into work. I got pulled out of the Peace Corps and I was like, I need to find a job. I need to support my kid.
Yeah. Wow. That's heavy. Okay. And then now you're a parent.
And then now I'm a parent.
And trying to figure out identity, grapple with being a parent. Like there, it's a lot. This was a tough time for Kaya. I can only imagine.
Yeah. Think like all my mom was my rock. My mom was my support. My mom was my co-parent. I was able to do this because I was able to leave Thailand and go to her house. And she gave me a place to start building parenthood and myself. And that kind of was my first experience, like at the introduction of pregnancy. And, you know, like another little thing that I'll kind of get into is just how cis normative, like pregnancy and parenthood and all of that stuff is. And even though I wasn't in a queer relationship at the time, my mom was my birth partner. My mom was my person. And we're in these classes together with all of these like couples. And it's like, where do we fit in here? Like, how do I fit in here?
Right. Yeah. Outside the box. We're out of the box. Trying to fit ourselves into this cis normalized like version of whatever this world has deemed it is.
Right. So,
yeah. So you have baby, mom helps, and you meet your current partner. And you know what, Kaya, I haven't asked how you identify.
I identify as a queer femme, non-binary.
Gotcha. Okay. And your partner, I'm assuming, you said they, so I'm assuming they go by they, them.
Yep. My partner's trans mask, they, them pronouns.
Gotcha. Okay. So you meet.
We can say Cappy. Their name's Cappy.
Okay. Cappy. And then Cappy and you finally realized, oh, this is more than just friendship. You finally got it. And then
right.
Y'all started living as a couple or that you started living as a couple. You brought Cappy into your life and baby's life.
Yep. Brought Cappy into life, into baby one's life. We move in together. We're starting to do the thing. Cappy, at the beginning of our relationship, wasn't trans mask at the time. They transitioned over the course of our relationship. So at the beginning couple of years mm-hmm. of our relationship, Cappy is starting their transition process. And I will tell you why I bring that up, because baby number two is conceived via RIVF. And so Cappy, the first couple of years is like getting on testosterone, getting like into who they are. And then we start talking about, oh, do we want to have another kid.
Right. Because you kind of have to think about that when you're starting this whole journey, right?
We're like, how do we want to do this? What do we want it to look like? And we go to a fertility doctor and they're like, okay, Cappy, you have to stop hormones. And gave us a picture of what it would look like.
Mm-hmm.
And we started the process, and it was so hard for Cappy. Like,
yeah, I can.
And one like trigger warning, during their egg retrieval, they uh-huh. had a complication.
Oh no.
And so they had to be rushed to, I had to convince them to go back to the hospital, and this is at COVID time, so I can't go. I just have to drop them off at the door, and they go in and they have an emergency surgery, and then I pick them up the next morning. It was just so traumatic.
Like, when it's already hard, and now we're adding an extra, like, layer. We'll be right back.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Love is love.
How long had Cappy been on testosterone before you started, before they had to stop?
Like 2 to 3 years, I would
say. Oh, wow. Yeah. So that's tough. That's hard.
Yeah.
So even with the complication, though, did you get eggs?
We get eggs. And Cappy wakes up and Cappy looks at me and they go, I don't care how many eggs we get. I'm never doing that again.
Fair. Fair.
And so luckily, like, we get eggs and those eggs turn into embryos and we're like, here, we've got this rolling.
Wait, and what did you do for the sperm aspect?
So the sperm aspect was a known donor friend of ours.
Oh, okay. Let's talk about that. Let's get into it. So how did that come about?
Yeah. So we asked it was a very close friend of ours or Cappy's. And I guess we'll kind of get into something that I want to share is obviously my first kiddo. Well, not obviously, but is Thai. I am white. I am not a Thai parent. And that is like a piece that I'm very conscious about in parenting. And when Cappy and I were talking about finding a donor, we were talking about like, we did not want one kid to feel like the brown kid of the family.
Right,
and we were just like talking about how to make him feel comfortable and like what is the most ethical way to like move forward with this. And we have a friend who is Chinese and who is a wonderful human and offered donation to us.
Just out of the blue?
We asked.
Oh, okay.
We asked.
Okay.
We asked and they thought about it and they were like, yep, I can do this. We did the donation through the fertility clinic. And so all of the stuff was done beforehand.
And can I ask, surrounding the known donor, did you all like talk through what it's going to look like? Did you draft up a contract? Did you use a lawyer to help you with it? Like, what was your process? Everybody does it different ways, and it's good to hear what other people do.
Yeah, we did not have a lawyer draft it. When we felt confident in the fertility, in the documents that the fertility clinic provided, where we're giving donating. Away their donating. They were donating. Yeah. Like they were like,
oh, so he was kind of treated like in a not like just as if like if it was a guy who wanted to be an anonymous donor and he was going to a bank to give
yes
DNA
yes
sperm
exactly it was yes
got it okay interesting okay that's one I haven't heard before actually
that's how it was arranged through our fertility clinic. They were like, they donated to the fertility clinic and then we
got it. And then, yeah. So, and then you got it through your clinic. But then since y'all are friends, did you talk through what it's going to look like, you know, once baby is here and you're still friend, like I'm imagining y'all talked about.
Yeah. So, well, a little context, like we're all mental health therapists.
Oh, wow.
And so I really looked at this. We all kind of looked at this on a like, what does the research say is best for like having this relationship? And to clarify, our friend is a trans femme and she uses she, they pronouns.
Okay. Oh, sorry. I'm like misgendering left and right. So sorry.
And she did not want children. She was like, I'm not looking for a parental role at all. Like I am available to share any information about my family, about me. Like I'm available to kind of be like a known person in the life who they know is the donor from the beginning and like, or is biologically related. So that's just kind of how it worked.
Awesome.
And we like it's evolved and like moving, like let's talk about like moving has impacted things and distance. So like we're going to be moving away. So there's just differences. So
yeah, because it's a extended family, right?
Yeah.
Like, you know, and it's a beautiful thing. And especially I love hearing like these known donor stories that just seem like you have created something so beautiful and something that works so well for you. But there is so much to think through in these stories. There's so much, all of our family building journeys have so many details to think through. But with a known donor, I feel like, you know, there's this layer where you have to really think through the rest of that child's life with this extra person who you love and want to be connected with, which is hard. And now moving is a whole other thing. Y'all are going to move?
Yeah, we're going to Thailand again.
Oh my God. What? Are you going back to the Peace Corps?
I am not. No.
Okay.
We've decided to leave this country. And there's multiple reasons why we want to go to Thailand. One, I want my oldest kiddo to experience growing up in that culture. Like, it's something that I've taken him to Watts. I've tried to, I can speak Thai, like broken Thai. Mm-hmm. And I've tried to expose him to as much as I can. But like, to get the chance to live there, I think is just something that I really want to give. And my partner being a trans person feels much safer there.
Oh, 100. No, yeah, it doesn't feel safe here. That's for sure. This is the time to do it, I suppose, right? Scary times, really scary times. Wow. That's okay. That's a whole other layer to the story that you're the second person this season, actually, that I talked to who left the country because of similar reasons. That's exciting for you.
Yeah, thank you.
Super exciting and kind of full circle, right?
Totally. I was like, well, where to start? Well, where it like starts in Thailand and it brings it back to Thailand.
All right. But you're going to keep in touch with your known donor and make it work. I'm assuming. Oh, we didn't finish the whole conception journey, but it sounds like everything worked out well. You got embryos.
My first pregnancy was an unplanned pregnancy with an IUD. Like, how the hell does that happen? And then my second pregnancy, I'm like, this is going to be cake. Like, if I can get pregnant with an IUD, I can get pregnant, like, no problem with IVF. It wasn't true.
Ugh.
I did 4 transfers.
Ugh.
And got my youngest kiddo on the 4th transfer. But we had a really hard time getting to there. It was brutal and it impacted our relationship. Like, wow. It was hard. And I guess why I mentioned that is I see that as, like, I've lived this personally, and I also see that, like, working as a therapist and a relationship coach is how trying to conceive that journey can impact relationships. The transition to parenthood, having a kid, impacts relationships, like all these different things.
Yeah, I hear you. And just to add fuel to this, like, us queer folks, we're going to have a journey in this fertility journey. It's going to be a journey. Like, it's not, we can't just, like, try to not try, you know, like, it doesn't work that way. There's no accidents here. So yes, we all have these journeys that are sometimes traumatic, like what you're describing. Mm-hmm. It's hard. It takes a toll. And it is important that we talk about that. Even when it's a smooth journey, it's not easy.
Right.
It's not. It's hard. There's lots of components that we're pulling from, that we're finagling things to make it work for us and it's not simple. So that's good. And I'd love to hear you say more on that if you have more you'd like to say.
I'm thinking back to that time and us being in the house and just, like, shots of hormones flying left and right. Like, they're doing testosterone.
Because they went right back on testosterone once those embryos were made, right? Like,
right.
They were like, yeah.
They were like, I'm done. So they're back on testosterone. And I'm, like, getting shots of progesterone and estrogen patches. And, like, there's just hormones flying throughout the house. And then we're still supposed to, you know, you're going through grief and loss. Like, I got pregnant and I had a miscarriage.
Oh, sorry.
And it was like the world kept spinning. The world kept going. I still had to go to work. Like, you don't get grief and loss time for a miscarriage. That puts an impact on the relationship. Like, it's just, like, it's hard not to get snippy at each other in those moments.
Mm-hmm. And so how did you get through it? What did you do as a therapist?
Relationship therapy and relationship coaching and, like, tools. Well, I guess that kind of came later. In the moment, what we did is we really had to remember that we were a team. Like, remember that we were not against each other, even though it felt like sometimes we were. Like, reframing, we're a team in this, helped us to, like, get through it.
And connecting, like, taking that time to connect with each other when you're going through. It's so hard to remember to connect. And it's so hard to remember to take a moment, see some good stuff in your partner, like, force yourself to see some good stuff in your partner, because there are times you don't want to see anything good. You get caught, right, in the cycles of just all the shit. But it's so important to take moments.
Yeah, like, remember that you love this person, that you want to make a human with this person. Like, yes, and soften a bit.
Yeah, when things get tough. Yeah, I hear that. I hear that. And you finally got there, and how beautiful that you each have a genetic tie to one kid.
Yep.
Which is super beautiful and super perfect. And I love that.
It worked out. And our kids are 3 and 9. They both know as much about their conception stories as age appropriate. And we've been talking about it, you know, for as long as possible. And so my 9-year-old knows all the ways babies can be made.
Yeah, and that's the way we do it in these families of ours. because sooner or later they're going to look around and see, oh, hey, my parents don't look like Johnny's parents at school. And so we start talking about it as soon as they have ears to hear, right? It's so important. How do you all talk about it in your house? Do you use books? We're a big book family.
Oh,
we have
totally.
All the books and we read the books regularly. Is that how you all do it?
Yeah, we're a big book family as well. Love reading the books. I can't remember the one, but it really talks about like all the different ways. IUI, IVF, and it's like one of my favorite books.
What makes a baby? What makes a baby? I have that one. And it's super inclusive.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good one. What makes a baby? I like that one.
And it talks about like C-sections and adoption. It kind of goes through the whole...
Yeah.
It's very inclusive.
Right. Yeah. And our kids know all about it. And our kids educate the other kids in the schoolyard.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's totally okay. They can know this stuff. Like if you break it down like scientifically and you just take out the ickiness of it, it's not. It's just, look, you need this and you need that. And you need them to be put together. And in order to do that, sometimes you got to go to a doctor. And sometimes you can do it. You know what I mean? Like it's really simple. It sounds like everything is going really great for you. And y'all are going to pack up. And when do you leave?
We're leaving in July, at the end of July.
Holy moly. Where are you going?
Yeah, we're going to Chiang Mai.
Okay. Okay. I asked that like I know anything. I've been to Bangkok. That's it. That's all I know. Did you want to talk about what you do and your services and things like that?
I can connect it a little bit to like where we were just going with like noticing, hey, the transition to like trying to conceive, all these different things impact our relationships, and how I nerd out is by like understanding why and how, and that led me to relational life therapy, which is the type of couples coaching that I do. And mm-hmm. I just think it's so helpful, like to have support available in times of transition.
And especially in the queer community, we definitely know transitions, don't we?
Yes.
If there's one thing you know in life, things are going to change. So having someone to help you through those changes is a smart idea. I say it all the time. I need a therapist, and then I get one, and then I drop off. So I think therapy is important for all of us, and especially with the world the way it is right now. I think we all need a therapist. Therapists need therapists. Everybody needs a therapist.
No, yes, this therapist has a therapist. Absolutely. Amen.
Amen. So are you offering services right now? Or
the Relational Compass, I offer virtual couples coaching services. I also have a course coming up that's going to be released in June couples can like go through at their own pace that I'm developing right now.
Oh, cool. So where can folks find you and your resources?
Yeah. So you can find me at my website, therelationalcompass.com. And I'm also on Instagram at therelationalcompass. Thank you for having me here. And it was great talking with you.
Awesome. It was great to talk to you. And good luck in Thailand. And send postcards. That's so fun.
Will do. Will do. Absolutely.
Queer Family Podcast.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier, you're going to join, and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah.